Film Twits. Ding.
Hello, it's your wife.
Hello, Glenda.
No, this is your wife. Hi, Dave. How's it going?
My wife doesn't sound like that.
I have the flu. Like what?
Beer.
Sound like I have a beard.
Sound like I have a
beard. Oh.
That I'm going to say something musically incorrect. Ooh. And it's going to be forever.
Oh my God.
That's actually a good point. Because I realized something the other day in maybe our first episode.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about The Patriot with Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And we went on and on about it. And I think that I was thinking of We Were Soldiers.
Oh, really?
I had the wrong movie the whole time. Totally, and Dave different. Is freaking out because he hates the movie. And I'm like, Vietnam. I love that movie. Yeah, it was...
So we were thinking of the Vietnam movie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because we were just going along with it. You're just like, yeah, those redcoats.
Because I even pointed out stuff. In We Were Soldiers, Mel Gibson's character, who's like the boss of the guys. I don't know military.
He's the commander, title. Yeah. Sergeant, whatever.
They make a point in the movie to show that he's, when the helicopters land in the battlefield, he's the first one off. But at the end of the battle, he's the very last one to get on the helicopter. They make a big deal out of it. And I even pointed it out in the podcast when we were talking.
Sam Elliott's.
But I'm talking about The Patriot. Really, there's no helicopters in The Patriot.
Yeah, that's true. That would be really weird if all of a sudden they come riding over the hill to fight the British and helicopters just come out of nowhere.
Dave might actually like The Patriot if that happened.
Hello, everybody. Congratulations. You have found another episode of Film Twits. My name is Brandon, and as always, I'm here with my lovely co-host, Caleb.
Hello.
And you are very fortunate tonight because Dave is not here. That sounded wrong. That came out. I'm very sorry to say that Dave is not here with us today. He is out of town.
Unfortunately.
But he's not dead.
This is the eulogy for Dave.
He's in a better place.
Oh my God.
He's alive.
In his stead, we have the privilege of having his lovely wife, Allison. Hello, Allison.
Hello. I so wanted to do a British accent.
Oh my god.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Everybody will be confused. I thought Dave wasn't there. In this episode, we are talking about soundtracks, which we're very excited about because all three of us are very much into music.
Yes.
Allison is a professional musician, so we get to hear her professional input.
There you go. Oh. You pulled it out.
On music.
Yes. We are very excited.
You sound very excited.
We are.
I try.
We really are. Like when, like I said earlier, when Brandon told me that you were going to be a part of this, I was like, ooh, someone who actually knows, you know, what she's talking about with music.
No pressure.
So, no pressure at all. The audience won't hate you if you get anything wrong.
22 people audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
We're up to 22?
Yes. I think
so. On the Facebook
so.
Page.
Yeah.
I've been That's inviting awesome. Everyone I know.
Yeah, aww, look at you. Awesome.
Thanks.
Trying.
That's great.
So.
Okay.
Allison, to you, what makes a good film score?
So I think the most important thing is that from beginning to end, it really tells the whole story. So like you could listen to the soundtrack and know exactly where in that movie it is. All the highs and the lows. And you can really hear the story through the music. That's the main point, is being able to hear the story. Mm-hmm. At different soundtracks, there's lots of things, whether they're orchestral and the different layering of the instruments, or if they're pop compilations or things, which I normally don't like, but there are a few that are just really well done because they match the scenes really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think those are the most important things.
I just a couple days ago watched Back to the Future with the kids. And that's a great example of that, because the whole opening where you're seeing Marty's regular day-to-day life, there's not one note of
Johnny B.
orchestra. Yeah, it's all, well, that's later.
That's later.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh. In the 80s, it's Huey Lewis. And
that's right. Yeah. That's right. It's Huey Lewis. Yeah.
But it's done on purpose to show his normal teenager 80s life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not until you first see the time machine that you start hearing
that theme.
Alan Silvestri.
I love that.
Yeah. Theme. So yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, that they can use sometimes pop music to help tell the story.
And that'll be something that we do throughout the episode, folks, is recreate these themes for you. So just be prepared for that.
I almost thought about bringing my violin and we could play Name That Tune.
Oh my gosh, that would have been amazing.
I didn't want to go through all the copyright.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Does it count if you hum it?
They can't get onto me for badly humming it.
No. I don't think that's possible at all. It's like having a tattoo of Spider-Man. Like, Disney can't copyright me because I have a... We're not there yet. I mean, a couple of years down the road, who knows? But anyways, I completely agree with that statement, Allison. I think that music in film is one of the better ways of telling the story. The writing, of course, is the main part of that, but music also does a wonderful job through most films of telling that story as well.
Because I mean, even if you go back to silent films, they added music in afterwards, or they would have a pianist there in the theater playing the music while you're watching. And so even early on, there was music to help tell the story and give that anxiety or the love scene, or it added, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And it also, well, and I think going on that point, like, music is just something that us as humans have gravitated towards for, you know, centuries. Like, music, because when it comes to the arts, it's music and visuals that really attract us. And when you combine the two, which is what film does, you know, we are instantly attracted to it, you know.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon, what's next?
What are your two cents?
And what do you have to say about music?
I like music, too.
Music is nice.
These are all great bumper stickers, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, right?
I like music.
Yeah, definitely the storytelling part of it. I get so irritated with more modern movies that just have generic... There's no themes. It's just they play a piece of music that has the feel you're supposed to have, whatever emotion you're supposed to have in that scene. But there's no... There's nothing that makes it stand out from the crowd, where John Williams, for example...
Mm.
You recognize right away his themes and
all of his themes.
Danny Elfman, who's another one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Danny Elfman's a good one.
And to go further with that, when they do, when they give different characters their own theme, that's also something I think that we see less and less.
That's called a leitmotif.
Leitmotif. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Exactly.
I didn't want to sound too.
Oh, you should.
Smart.
Have. You go right ahead.
Do what you want to do, Brandon. It's your podcast.
It ruins my image.
Right.
Your image of not being pompous?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you. Going off that point, the only really, like, themes that I've noticed recently has been the Avengers theme. Like, that's instant. You hear that and you're like, I know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
But, like, even some of the other Marvel films, like, they're not really been any standout music. It all seems very generic. Kind of on your point, Allison, of back to when you were talking about soundtracks, the Guardians of the Galaxy films do that very well.
Oh,
to
yeah.
where
that's on my
their
list.
Music... Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, go right ahead.
But I'm just saying how the period music that they use in those films really accentuates the scenes that they're in and really helps move the story along.
Mm-hmm. So. And an example of when they do that wrong, this is another one of my pet peeves I could have talked about in our cliches episode. When they'll do something like a song that has nothing to do with the scene or the movie, but there's in the song, there's a word or a phrase that is kind of the same. Like, I don't know, one that pops up is, I think it was just in the trailer though, for Nemo. And they played,
Unforgettable.
No,
that was Finding Dory.
Somewhere.
Oh. Across the Sea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the story of Nemo, but oh, it's a song that mentions the sea, and our movie is in the sea, so we should use it.
Well, I hate that. For that stuff. One particularly.
That one didn't bother me, but I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that one didn't bother me either. Because it was for the trailer you're talking about, right? Like, they didn't have that in the movie.
Correct. Yeah, and I can't think of an example where they've done it in movies.
I get what you're saying.
But they do, and it bugs me. Because little thought went into it.
Right.
They just knew of a song that has a word
and
that matches the movie.
Regarding trailers, music overall is just so generic. And so I think we talked about this as well, how like most of the time they'll pick like a song and get somebody to sing like a dreary pop version of it, which just takes all of the emotion out of that song. And I just see it happen all the time now for trailers. But we're not talking about trailers. Mm-hmm. We're talking about music.
No, if you'd like to hear us talk about trailers, then go find our episode about trailers.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, so back to what we were talking about.
How about favorite composers? So I already said John Williams and Danny Elfman.
I mean, well, we can't just like say John Williams and Danny Elfman. I mean, they
do you like them too?
I love them both.
Of course. Like
I know everybody loves them.
I would say... since you asked the question, I would say personally my favorite composers would be John Williams, Hans Zimmer, and Howard Shore. I have not heard a piece by any of them that I did not like. A close, runner-up would be James Horner, but that's specifically for the Braveheart soundtrack and the Titanic soundtrack, or score, I'm sorry. Just because they have so much emotion to me, especially the ending of Braveheart, that piece that's in there at the very tail end of it, I could listen to that like all day. I love it so much. But I like you guys were saying with John Williams' music specifically, there are so many themes of his that you could just start them, play a couple of seconds, and you would instantly know, oh, that's Jaws. Oh, that's Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, like, Back to the Future is amazing. Silvestri, actually. Mm-hmm. Never mind. I'm sorry. Star Wars, Superman, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, you could go on and on and on.
Jurassic Park,
yes. I love Jurassic Park.
You know what? While we're talking about John Williams, so in an earlier episode, you, Caleb, challenged Dave and I, because we were talking about the prequels, the Star Wars prequels.
Yes, yes.
And I made the statement, or I voiced the opinion, that I felt like the music in episodes 1, 2, and 3 weren't as, I don't know, standout-ish. I didn't like the music in those three as good as the original trilogy.
Right.
And so...
And I mentioned Duel of the Fates from The Phantom Menace, and I mentioned Battle of the Heroes from Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, and I talked about Duel of the Fates.
And you both bullied me and said but that I was wrong. It was really fun.
Well.
Thanks for reminding me.
I took your challenge, and I went and rented the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack from the library.
Oh, nice.
And I listened first to Battle of the Heroes.
Okay, right? What'd you think?
It's actually really good. And as soon as it started, and this speaks to, I think, John Williams' goodness as a composer. As soon as it started, I recognized it.
It's been a long day for Brandon.
I'm tired. As soon as it started, I recognized it. And I, like in my mind, I went straight to that scene. But yeah, I did remember. And it is really, really good.
It's really epic.
I do, however... kind of still stand by. I don't think theme-wise it's really as... I don't know. It doesn't stand out to me like...
Because you're biased and that you just don't like 1, 2, and 3. And so for me, I don't like 1, 2, and 3. And so I would never go choose to listen to that soundtrack because I don't want to be reminded of 1, 2, and 3.
I got you.
I will say, though, just musically, so the next song after that one on the soundtrack is, what's it called? Anakin's Betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
It is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely. And while I was listening to it, I realized it was kind of making me think of the Harry Potter music, which is John Williams. and it occurred to me, I wonder if it's more that since, like, I don't know, maybe the mid-90s, John Williams kind of changed a little bit in his styles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not savvy enough to, like, pinpoint what is different, but I don't know. I think with the prequel music and with, like, mm-hmm. Harry Potter, I think that it's different to me.
Yeah.
Than his more classical pieces. I kind of wonder if he's like running out of ideas.
It's definitely not as well known.
Yeah.
But I don't agree with that statement personally. Because as
well, that's too bad. You can go home.
I know. Okay. Well, goodbye, everybody. Like you said in the Star Wars episode, you did agree with me that both the Rey theme and the Kylo theme were very, very well done.
Yes.
And a couple of other pieces in the sequel trilogy of Star Wars. But once again, I mean, to make your point, it's not as iconic. Like, it would take you time to, like, listen to it and be like, okay, that's what that is. But even if you're a layman, not someone like us that's, you know, into movies and knows these back and forth, you hear the Star Wars theme, you know that's Star Wars. You hear Jaws, that's Jaws. You know, you don't have to be, quote-unquote, a movie head to know these things. So, to go on that, I do partly agree with you in your assessment.
Thanks.
There. You're welcome.
And, I mean, to clarify, John Williams is the best. It's relative to his old stuff. You know, it's all wonderful. He's great. It just, you know, some of the newer stuff just doesn't
as far as rock my world film like composers stuff,
but
go,
it's all good.
I think he's probably the best, I would say.
Yeah, easy.
It's hard to say anyone is above him, but that's, you know, that's our opinion, so.
And it's the right one.
It's the right opinion.
Can I say one more thing while we're on that?
While you're on John Williams?
Yeah.
Or Star Wars?
Go ahead.
Both.
Both. Okay.
I think it was also while I was listening to Anakin's Betrayal, because I could take an entire episode talking about the Rogue One soundtrack, because it's fantastic, and I love it, and I love what Michael
Giacchino
did, because
he did something different, for sure.
I think that he did something different, but at the same time, he... Like, I could totally believe that he studied the John Williams music from the Star Wars movies, because he gives it the same feel. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that in the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack, there would be parts where I'd think, man, that it kind of made me think of Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought not a direct copy, but just in the sound versus the old Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I thought it was neat. I hadn't noticed that before.
Yeah.
But it just kind of added to my appreciation of the Rogue One soundtrack.
Oh, well, that's good. So, Allison, you have notes.
Stop. Don't make me sound like a nerd.
No, it's fine. So what did you write down?
Well, first thing I started with was my top 10 soundtracks.
Okay.
Just what my favorites were for my personal, like, you know, people say, well, if you were to have a soundtrack of your life, what would it be like?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of pulled from these 10 soundtracks and I really like all of them.
Run through them.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, number one, we've already talked about Star Wars.
It's okay.
Oh, okay.
I didn't put a certain episode with it.
Just any of the OT.
I don't think you can compare them. Yeah, they're all great. Sense.
Yeah, they're all right.
And then number two actually is Kill Bill.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. Volume one is amazing. Like,
yeah.
That's a movie where all the music, oh my gosh, I never would have thought of putting that music there, but that's amazing and awkward and perfect.
Uh-huh.
And then
just going on that, I watched it a couple of weeks ago. I rewatched it, and the scene where Elle is in the hospital and they bring that orchestration in, it is so, like, just terrifying and intense.
The whistle song?
The whistle song, yeah. Da, da, just the way da, it's played da, da, and how Tarantino da, da, films it and everything. Oh,
mm-hmm.
It's a great sequence.
That soundtrack is one of my oft-rented or checked out at the library.
Mm-hmm.
I love really that soundtrack.
Good. You really like checking soundtracks out.
Well, I don't like spending money.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point.
That's good.
You can pull up anything on YouTube. Anyways,
what's number three?
Number three is Forrest Gump.
Nice.
Because it goes from like the 50s to the 80s, you know, and it's like a full on music compilation of someone's entire life.
Yeah.
You
know?
And there's a lot of great music on it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Number four, Pink Panther. Henry Mancini.
The cartoon?
Like the original movie.
Yeah. From the
The music
80s,
is,
right? Yeah.
It was way before that.
It was like late 60s.
I mean, we can look it up.
with what's his name? I'm trying to remember.
Peter Sellers.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. That movie was really funny.
Yeah, 1963.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah. But I mean, that's another just theme that's standalone. Like, anybody hears that, they know exactly what that is. Mm-hmm. And it's lasted a long time. It's sneaky and it's perfect for that character.
Like, exactly.
It's amazing. And Henry Mancini was just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And this, number five, is the only musical I included because I feel like musicals are amazing. They're all centered on the music. It would be unfair to include more than one. So Sound of Music, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
Is probably, I think, the best illustration of a musical in movie form.
It's got a lot of good songs.
They're all iconic. Everybody knows where they come. Yeah. And then number six, The Wedding Singer.
Oh, I've never seen The Wedding Singer.
Oh, it's pretty good.
I know.
For an Adam Sandler movie, it's pretty good.
I know.
That's.
I feel so ashamed.
That's a. It's a pretty good music compilation. And then also, the song that he sings at the very end of the movie is what Dave and I danced to at our wedding.
Oh, cool.
With a guitar on the plane. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a special song.
Yeah. Nice.
Not just. Yeah.
Very cool.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
Volume 1 only.
Oh,
not
really?
Volume 2?
Didn't like Volume 2?
Didn't really like Volume 2.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
I think it was as good as the first volume.
Well, I agree with that.
I have found, after I got Volume 2, and I did buy both Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, so do we.
Those were both my one purchase a year.
Are we talking about the soundtrack or the movies?
The soundtrack.
Okay, I gotcha.
After I bought, because I loved Volume 1 and I would listen to it all the time. When I got 2, I have listened to that one much more. And I find when I go back and put in Volume 1, it's kind of, I don't want to say boring, but I don't know. It's not as exciting to me. Volume 2 is more like back-to-back every song. I'm like, oh, yeah. And Volume 1 was like, yeah, this one's good. Yeah, this one's okay. Yeah. But I'll find myself skipping songs in Volume 1 to get to the next one. I don't do that with 2.
See, and I find the difference between listening to movie soundtracks for me rather than just listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
Because on its own, I probably wouldn't pick out songs from the Forrest Gump soundtrack and say, I want to listen to this song. But probably wouldn't do that. But I like to listen to it
together.
But as a whole thing, like the whole point is that I can relive the movie through the music. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't feel like I could do that with Volume 2. Like the songs didn't stand out to me as much as that opening song in Volume 1. Now I'm trying to think of it.
The Ooga Chaka?
Da, da, da.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I just see it. You know,
I got a feeling. Ooh. Oh, that's not it.
That's not it.
It's Black Eyed Peas or something.
Dun, da, da, da,
never mind.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah, like, the only
you
one.
You just see it.
Yeah. Oh, the one where he's dancing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey. What's the matter with you?
Exactly, yeah. Guys. Yeah. And then, yeah,
the only one I remember from Volume 2 is, oh man, I completely forgot. Just
well, there's the blue skies.
Blue skies?
Blue.
How no. does that go?
You mean Mr. Blue Sky?
Mr. Blue Sky. Yeah,
yeah, that's like the only good song on the soundtrack, I think. But
I don't remember. Anyways, I'm sorry, Allison.
Go ahead. Is that even on the soundtrack?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that was a good choice for them to do.
Yeah. And of course, I can't think of any of the other songs because I can't think of songs when I
when you're prompted.
Yeah,
and you didn't take notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, oh well.
All right, what's next on your list?
You're better at this than we are.
No, and then number 8, I did not like the movie so much, but I love the soundtrack. A Brother Where Art Thou? I can't say that.
A brother, where
it sounds just like one of the characters.
You didn't like that movie?
I mean,
it's so silly.
It was silly, but it's just not one of my favorite movies. Aww. But yet, it ended up on my top 10 for a music compilation.
It's a blind spot for me. I love the Coens, and I haven't seen it. I own it, but I haven't watched it.
Oh wow!
See, so. I have like Roots of Bluegrass and just Alison Krauss and like all these greats.
Yeah,
and so. The soundtrack on its own is really great.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie's good, but I think the soundtrack's better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I gotcha.
And then number 9 is High Fidelity, which is a movie about music.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw it.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John Cusack?
You know, I think I know. It's the all one about you're having
top
about?
5 and like all these just different music things and how they relate to your life.
Is that the one where he holds the boombox over his head?
No, let's say anything.
Oh yeah.
Good try, Brandon.
That's just the only scene I know with.
I thought you guys knew something John about Cusack. Movies or something.
Well, you know, we say that
not all.
So we'll movies. Talk about Star Wars and we'll talk about Lord of the Rings
and Avengers.
And Avengers.
That's pretty much.
And
it.
Sometimes Hook.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, maybe one day.
That's another John Williams.
That's right.
Yeah,
it is. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
it's really great.
We'll get Dave to like it eventually. All right, and then the last one I wrote down was Beetlejuice.
Oh, good.
Beetlejuice. Any Danny Elfman really is really great.
Especially Edward Scissorhands, that was another one I really like. Mm-hmm. That's on my
Which
own
one?
Mentions.
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh.
One of my favorites of his, and I don't think it's appreciated enough, is Big Fish. As a movie and as a soundtrack, I think it's underappreciated.
I never saw Big Fish. Down.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I know.
And the music.
I've got a lot of blind spots.
It's a very, I don't know, like dreamy and crazy movie. And the music just goes along with it.
I'm going to write it down on my list now just because I forgot about that. And I'm sad I did.
You're welcome.
Not that this list means anything because I'm sure I'll just throw it away later tonight.
No, you should immortalize it. Put it up on the wall.
Hey, so how about.
How about what?
Like what. What are some emotional, what am I asking?
Emotional pieces.
What are some emotional scenes or movies that have stuck with you that mean a lot to you because of the music, or at least the music is a part of it? Okay. Like you said, like you made the list based off those moments or those feelings or whatever. So what are some specific standout moments?
I think the first one that I think of is have you seen Schindler's List?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. The theme where it's really pronounced where he sees the little girl.
Then the red coat. Yeah.
Yeah. And everything else is black and white.
Yeah.
And like everything just kind of sinks in for you.
Yeah.
And it's strange because I've played that theme at a lot of weddings.
Oh,
that's
because
kind
it's
of
really beautiful.
Odd, but yeah, it is.
But it
really
is odd
piece.
When I know where it's from. But people listen to it, they're like, "That's a very thoughtful piece." Hmm. It's like a.
It's really mournful.
Yeah.
Like, but you're right. It is beautiful, and I saw that movie for the first time last year in because it came out for its 25th anniversary in theaters again. So I went with my friend and we both saw it, and wow, what a film.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely mind blowing how good that film is and just how emotionally raw it is, especially as someone who is, has that in their blood, is Hebrew. a very small part, but still, it's very effective. So, anyways, I don't want to.
And that's another John Williams.
Get on it. Exactly.
Yep. Did you know that? No, wait. Which one was it? Jurassic Park. Is Jurassic Park the same time as Schindler's List?
Yeah, same year.
Mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg was over whatever country he was at filming Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Park was in post-production. Mm-hmm. So, like, at the same time, he's over there filming Schindler's List, and then he'd have, like, over the phone or whatever meetings, signing off on music or
He did whatever. It so he wouldn't go insane. He was looking at the dailies and like talking to them about Jurassic Park, so he wouldn't go insane from
So he wasn't what he all was doing. Schindler's List all the time. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. One scene in particular that really jumps out for me, big surprise, Lord of the Rings, is the scene where Frodo and Sam have gotten to Mount Doom, and Frodo has climbed his way up the mountain, and he's just come to his final wit's end where he can't go on any further. And the music is playing in the background. It's a different rendition of the Shire theme, and it's very, I don't want to say low because the music is playing. It's at a medium tone. It's not overtaking the scene, but you can still hear it. And Sam comes up to him, and then he gives his speech where he's saying, you know, I can't go on, Sam. I can't see anything but darkness. And Sam says, well, let us be rid of it. And he takes on the mantle of getting Frodo up the mountain and into the fiery pits of hell, basically. And just the music playing over it really helped to accentuate the emotionality of that scene. That's one of my favorite scenes of cinema. I think it's perfectly acted, perfectly shot, and the music really helps to make it just fantastic. So cool. That is my pick.
Nice.
Brandon.
Good.
Do you have one?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, moving on. No.
I asked the question, but I don't have an answer. I can't think of a specific scene. I'm thinking about music or whatever pieces that have stuck with me. And I think of some like, well, we already talked about Back to the Future, but that's mm-hmm. always been a big one for me just because the age I was at when those movies came out, I don't know, it was big and exciting and fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a really great score, especially the main theme. It's it gives you a sense of adventure, very similar to Williams with Raiders of the Lost Ark theme. You just hear that and you automatically like, you're just like, I want to go and I want to raid some caves and find treasure and, you know, get chased by, you know, other, I don't know, but just you have the sense of adventure. And Back to the Future's theme does the same thing for me. It's just, cause I think it's because it's of how just quick it is. You know, it's just like, it really,
what's that, triumphant,
fast paced. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Allison. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's triumphant and it's just great. Yeah.
Which is very, like, when you think about music composition in general, there's all sorts of composers and they all mm-hmm. have their signature trait. But when you think of like Americana music,
mm-hmm.
it's all that triumphant sound.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why some of us lean towards that feeling. It's like, we've grown mm-hmm. up with that. We know what that sounds like and it's exciting and we don't even realize we like it, but we do.
Yeah.
I can mention Dave's things that he brought up.
Oh, Dave. Yeah, that guy.
Who I'm filling in for. So he said his all-time favorite soundtrack ever, which is Matrix soundtrack.
Oh, really?
Which, and then I had to go like listen to parts of it and refresh my memory. And I mean, it kind of does go all over the place for like Prodigy and Rob Zombie. Yeah. And then what was it?
Yeah.
And then it has like Django and Stefan Grappelli, old school jazz thrown into it, and I've just forgotten a lot of that. So
yeah, I don't remember the Matrix soundtrack at all.
I was never allowed to listen to music like that.
Okay.
So that
my
so
wife
that's
doesn't let me.
Favorite
your
overall.
Wife doesn't. Let me. That so that's what Dave said was his all-time favorite soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
And then he always talks about Clint Mansell and Requiem for a Dream, Lux Eterna.
Yeah.
Which yeah, it's a great piece. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you have the motif that's over and over and over, and you would think, like, looking at it on paper, if you could read music,
yeah,
looking at it, and this looks like so over. Done like uh-huh. this is over and over, but the way he builds on it and like pulls it out and
now just so I'm on the same page, that's the one that goes dun 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 dun. Is that
no
it? No oh okay
now I gotta
okay.
try to remember how to sing it. Oh
man, it's like caught almost there.
So while she's looking for that, Brandon, what is some of your favorite scores and soundtracks?
That one?
Sorry. Move on up.
I'm trying to think of some that haven't already been said because Allison took a lot of mine.
I mean, just because she took them doesn't mean that.
Honorable mentions. Let's yeah. see.
Just because she took them doesn't mean you can't say it either.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So the ones I agree with are Star Wars. Wait, what did she say? Yeah, Kill Bill. I wouldn't have even thought of Kill Bill, but that's definitely Forrest Gump. That was one of the first that I purchased. I would listen to that all the time. I'd come home from school and pop it in and like lay down on my bedroom floor
it's
with my eyes
movie.
Closed and just go off
yeah.
into wherever imaginary land.
One of Tom Hanks' best.
Let's see.
Well, I mean, we had mentioned it earlier, but I don't think anybody really said anything about it. But like the Jurassic Park soundtrack.
Jurassic Park, yeah.
Is really...
That's another one I played at a lot of weddings.
Oh, really?
Strangely. Well,
that one makes more sense, I think, than
people
the
like
Schindler's
it as
List.
A processional.
One of my favorites, and it kind of stands out. It's different, I think, than a lot of the music we're talking about, but Inception.
Oh yeah,
I Hans really Zimmer. Enjoy, yeah. And it's crazy because I'm so anti repetitive music.
Mm-hmm.
Zimmer, I think I've talked about it here before, but it's crazy how Zimmer he repeats a lot. He doesn't mm-hmm. always, and there are songs where he doesn't have a whole lot of notes, but something about the way he does it is still very entertaining.
His music seems very minimal to me, but I like that. Like especially, so my example would be the opening to The Dark Knight with the Joker theme that plays. Yeah. It's just this one.
Joker's theme is literally.
No, it's like it starts out though, but it builds. It builds and builds and builds because it's this one. It's like someone scratching a violin, but not like playing it. And it's just like this one little screeching noise, but it mm-hmm. grows and grows. And then he adds more to the, that one noise. And it becomes just this something, you know, that's really both, intense, but also mysterious,
mm-hmm.
which goes along with the scene because
yeah.
we don't know who this guy is.
And that's the thing, because again, when you have the movies where the music is just generic
mm-hmm.
And it has the quote correct feel or whatever, it sounds scary or, ooh, it sounds exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Zimmer understands the story and he understands the characters. So even though it might be kind of minimal, he understands, like he purposely made it kind of crazy and it makes your skin crawl and it makes you mm-hmm. uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the things that you said, because that's who the Joker is. It fits his character.
Yeah, exactly.
And that goes with what I was telling you the other day about, in Dunkirk, and I looked it up
yeah.
later, and like an Interstellar, that whole shepherd's tone
mm-hmm.
thing that I was telling you about, where it sounds like it's increasingly going
yeah.
up.
Explain that for us. What is it called?
So they're called actually. So people call it now the Hans Zimmer effect. mm-hmm. but it's actually called shepherd tones. Mm-hmm. And it's where you have, so you know what octaves are?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
La, so you. La, la. No, that's.
No, la, that was la, an arpeggio.
Yeah. La, la.
Yeah, that's an octave. So a shepherd tone is where you have three octaves. You have a high mm-hmm. octave, a medium octave, if you want to say, and the lower octave.
Okay.
And they're all going up in a scale at the same time, at the same speed, mm-hmm. and they're all the same pitch, just three different octaves. And the top octave, the high octave, it's getting increasingly softer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The middle octave is the same volume. And the lower octave is doing the opposite of the top. So it creates the stairwell climbing effect that is just circular.
Oh,
it never climbs higher. But if you listen to it, you must think, wow, this is getting higher and higher and higher. It's building intensity. But no, it's an auditory illusion.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's just really cool that, you know, composers like Hans Zimmer can build on these things.
So he did that with the stopwatch in Dunkirk is what you're saying?
So, there is a stopwatch part of it, but it's mm-hmm. also, I'm trying to remember, I think it's where, I was going to say the airplane, there's lots of planes in it. I can't remember exactly the scene. It happens all throughout the movie, and it happens all throughout Interstellar as well.
Oh, okay.
It may even happen in Inception. I'm not sure.
Possibly.
But there's a lot of really great YouTube videos. If you YouTube shepherd tones, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that really show you in a visual way. And I think there's even in Mario, in Nintendo 64, where Mario is climbing stairs, mm-hmm. it sounds like it's going higher and higher, but it's not. It's the same thing. It's a circular.
It's a shepherd tone.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought that when I played like Mario 64 and he was going up the stairs to Bowser's and it's just going do 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 do, like the tone is getting louder and louder and louder. So okay, well, I had no idea. That's great. Facts with Allison.
Oh, so the Lux Aeterna thing is the da 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 da.
Oh yeah.
And then it goes da 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 da.
That one, yes, 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 yes. Back in like the early 2000s, it was played in a lot of trailers. And that's where I heard it, because I've never seen Requiem for a Dream, even though I've heard it's really good. But
I watched it one time, and I'm glad I did. But I don't think I'll watch it again.
That's what I've heard as well. Yes, it's like a one and done movie.
Yeah, but there's something to be said about a movie like that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think some movies you have to just watch them once because you can't put yourself through that experience again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't think we can talk about music and without Dave here unless we were to talk about what your favorite James Bond.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
All right, obviously, that is the main thing. You know what I mean, though.
Oh, gosh.
I like... my personal favorite of the opening themes with James Bond would be close between Skyfall.
That's mine.
And Goldfinger.
You take Goldfinger because Skyfall is
Shirley
mine.
Bassey.
No, I already said what I said. Shirley Bassey was great. And I love that theme because it is so iconic and retro as well. Mm-hmm. You hear that and you immediately know that's Goldfinger, you know?
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, Adele's Skyfall is just, it fits the film,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, it's so great. I love it so much. And she's a phenomenal singer. So, yeah, that would be mine.
Something that was so strange when I was a kid is that a lot of times those opening songs do not sound, which one was it? What are some of the popular ones? From
the
back then,
ones?
Yeah.
From Russia with Love.
Not that one.
Okay.
Like a really soft one.
What was the
really
one?
Soft.
Oh,
that
who's the
Carly Simon one?
No, the Beatles guy.
The Beatles guy.
Who's Paul McCartney?
Oh.
What was his?
Yeah,
what was
his? He did one. That's right. The only other one I really remember is the one that was in Die Another Day, because it was Madonna.
There was one,
It
was earlier on. It was probably 60s or 70s or
Live
whatever.
And Let Die. That's
Live and Let Die.
Was it that one? I don't think it was that one. Anyways, a song came on the radio. And when I was a kid, I had to listen to the soft radio station, you know, because that's what my mom listened to. Mm-hmm. And anyways, this song came on. Oh, well, I knew the song. Man, I wish I knew right now which one it was.
I'm trying to find it for you.
Anyway, and she told me that it was from a James Bond. And I was like, what? Because it was like the softest like romantic song, and I was like, you know, as a kid, all I know of James Bond is he's a cool spy with a gun, and so it was so weird to me. Anyway, that always stuck with me, that the theme song kind of stood apart from the movie somewhat. Well, maybe not all the time, but it's just something that always stuck with me.
That's why I thought you might be talking about Nobody Does It Better. That one, that's the
A James Bond.
Yeah, Nobody Does It
Better. Wow, I didn't know that. But I think that's one of the things I like about Skyfall is from the very first note, it just feels like James Bond.
It does. You know what doesn't feel like James Bond? Sam Smith's song, Inspector.
I liked it until he went into the high falsetto and then stayed there. And
yeah.
I was like,
yeah. Then he's just singing like this. I was just like, no.
That's one of the, please, like, no. I want to enjoy it, but yeah, I think that's probably about the party loses me too. I'm like, yeah, this isn't bad.
I mean, not to mention that the film's not that good.
No.
Like, it's okay, but...
I liked Spectre.
I mean, it was a Roger Moore film.
I'm going to laugh for David.
Daniel Craig.
Thank you.
it was definitely a Roger Moore James Bond film with Daniel Craig. It was campy. But it was still trying to be serious and just not.
Maybe that's what they were doing, though. And having, like, Blofeld, they were trying to bring some James Bond
back. I don't think they did it well, personally. I wasn't a fan.
I'm usually in a little cocoon. I'll enjoy a movie, and it's one of my favorites, and I love it. And then, all of a sudden, one day, I find out that most of the world hated it.
Transformers.
And I'm like, what's going on? I thought this was a good movie. That happened with Spectre. I was so surprised when I found out that people didn't like it, especially Dave, who's like the biggest James.
And
so,
I tried to make excuses for it when I came out of the theater. I was
even,
like,
well,
it was like,
well, but that's
after
the thing,
thinking
though.
About it, I'm just like, no,
I so after I knew so many people didn't like it, and I heard I would read or hear their complaints about it. I rewatched it, and I through the whole thing, I'm going, I just don't know what they're talking about. I really like this. Not, you know, it's below Skyfall, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just weird.
I liked Solace better, to be quite honest.
Oh, yeah. Not me.
Yeah, sorry.
The first time, maybe, but second viewing, I was like, wow, this is not good.
Yeah. I think it's better than...
The editing and the action shot, it's just not good.
Yeah. As a side note, should we talk about how they announced the new 007 today?
What are you
thinking
about
that?
Oh, man. So, I sent it to Dave, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him about
it. So the article says that he's retired in the new movie, and they bring him back, and she has taken on the mantle of 007. So it's not, as far as we know right now, that she's going to be the new James Bond.
Yeah, she's not James Cena Bond.
But
I think,
still, it's a little weird.
I think it's a really interesting twist, because everybody, for like half of Daniel Craig's run, everybody is talking about who's going to be the next James Bond. And I think, what's his name, has gotten the most votes.
Idris Elba?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he would be good. I don't think he wants to do it. But anyway, there's been so much talk about it. And then they threw this curveball. Oh, because it's also come up occasionally, should a woman finally be James Bond? Mm-hmm. And then so now they caught everybody off guard. Yeah, there is going to be a woman in this movie, but she's not James Bond, she's 007. Like, nobody saw that coming. So I appreciate the surprise, nobody knew this was coming.
But
at the same time, I'm like...
It's James Bond.
It also feels so run-of-the-mill, too, that he's retired. I mean, that's basically what he did in Skyfall.
But the whole point of James Bond is that he doesn't retire, that he's been around since 1960-something.
Yeah. So, for that part, I'm like, I think I'm just going to keep my mind open, because I don't know the story, and I'll wait and see the movie,
then
I'll decide.
I'll go ahead
but
and
my,
say, no way.
My first reaction was...
Allison's putting her finger on it.
Put my foot down.
I think my first reaction was a negative one, but then I backed up, and I was like, well, I'll wait and see. I don't tend, I, most of the time, I don't like to judge a movie before it comes out.
Yeah.
Oh, I always do, so.
Allison's like, I don't care.
My gut feeling is usually what I always stick to as well, which is actually unfortunate, but I can't backpedal and be like, oh, I like it now. No. Once I don't like something, I can't go back and like it.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
You go very back fickle. On yourself?
I'm fickle. I'm like a girl.
You're like a flip-flop?
No offense.
No comment.
Anyway. Dave's favorite James Bond theme.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to guess it? Do you think you know?
I'm going to say Skyfall.
What do you think, Brandon?
I don't know. I don't know any others.
Okay. I'll tell you.
Okay, tell me. I don't know.
Chris Cornell's You Know My Name from Casino Royale. That is his all-time favorite.
That's a good one, too.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, I mean, that's the James Bond theme, but...
Well, they put it in the song, though. Yeah. That's a really good title sequence.
Gosh, I have to hear it. I can't remember it.
You know my name. Da-da-da-da-da. That's like the end of it. The tail end of it. That was a great movie, by the way.
That's one of Dave's all-time favorites. Dr. No and Casino Royale. He loves both.
So many people get hung up on the poker stuff, and I'm just like,
what's wrong with the poker stuff?
Like, they think it's boring, and I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Well, that's James Bond, people. James Bond. So if you don't like him, then go ahead and make a new James Bond character for your new movies.
Yeah.
That's other people will like that don't like poker.
Make a spy franchise and have it be the person who's 007 now. But don't call her 007, call her something else.
Yeah.
Because that's James Bond and not her.
Jamesina.
Did you say, I don't think you ever said what your favorite, some of your favorite soundtracks were, or scores.
Did I not finish?
No.
Yeah, you started like.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of the ones I own. Oh, okay. I've got one. This is a, would you call this a guilty pleasure?
I don't know. You have to tell us first.
So, you know how everybody loves Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage movies?
Nicolas Cage.
I don't know anyone who loves Nicolas Cage.
One of my liked movies is...
Not the Bees.
Is Family Man.
Oh, you've talked about
never
this
seen
before.
Family
Have
Man.
I?
Yeah, well, to us you have.
That's the one where he's got a bow on his back?
No, it's kind of like... It's a Christmas movie, but it's kind of like a weird twist on It's a Wonderful Life. It starts out, he's like this super rich dude. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it turns out... I mean, it starts out where he left his fiance at the airport to go to London, somewhere overseas.
I've only seen it once.
For law school.
I feel like how he turned to you, he's like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I've tuned you
anyway,
up.
Anyway, he flies away to law school. He never came back. And so poor fiance girl, her heart is broken, and he goes on and becomes super wealthy and never married or settled down or nothing. Angel named Don Cheadle comes down and gives him...
That's how you feel when you see it on screen, too.
Really?
Oh,
so he gives him this glimpse of what life would have been like if he had come back home and married the girl.
It's like Christmas Carol.
And so,
does he have an accent? No. He should be playing his character from the Ocean's movies. That's what I want to see.
Oh, yeah. So most of the movie is Nicolas Cage as a family man. He's got two kids. And so he's got... Anyway, I don't want to tell the whole movie.
Yeah, don't give it all away.
But Danny Elfman did the score.
Uh-huh.
And it's just... It's really lovely.
I'll have to check it out. Sounds pretty good.
And it... You can't find... They didn't put out the score. They had a soundtrack, but it was mostly like... Seal and other singers, like pop songs, and there were I think two pieces from Danny Elfman's score, and it stinks because you watch the movie, and while you're like enraptured with the amazingness of the movie, you're also noticing, man, this music is just wonderful, but there's no way I have found to actually acquire this music, so it makes me sad. But anyways.
I'll have to check it out, Brandon.
So
thanks for bringing it to my attention.
So anyways, so that long story was to say that's another one of my favorite soundtracks.
Very cool. Some of mine, I would say.
And Wall-E.
Wall-E.
Sorry, well, just hit me.
That's the side note, is every single Disney soundtrack ever made is also my favorite.
Pretty much. Except for Lion King.
That's why I didn't
post any of them.
What?
I'm bored with Lion King.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
You don't like the Lion King?
It's at all?
I mean, you don't even know what he's saying. It's like he's speaking another language.
Circle of life.
It is another language, Brandon.
Well, until he starts singing the Circle of Life, then it's English.
And then it's another.
Yeah. Back. Then it's another language. Yeah.
But I will, Lion King is just on the lower end of my Disney list.
I don't feel like I can trust you now.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Anyway, that's enough of that thing. What, like 10 minutes ago, you were starting to say something.
Yeah. So some of my favorite scores, I would say, would be The Lord of the Rings, obviously, all of them. All of the Star Wars movies. Braveheart. I really enjoy the Batman 89 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the main theme. I that immediately puts you in the shoes of Batman, and you are Batman. You hear that, and
well, and the way that it has
punch a half
the way that so many years later it has continued to be the Batman theme, and it still pops up.
It popped up in various ways.
Yeah,
popped up in Justice League, like out of nowhere.
That really says something.
Didn't really fit the scene, but it worked because it was nostalgic. So. I agree with Allison. Growing up, like watching all the Disney movies, soundtracks and songs are like part of me. There's so many good soundtracks out there. Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think Jaws is really great. I mean, honestly, I could go on and on. Soundtrack wise, I would say I'm a huge fan of every single one of Tarantino's films. I think besides James Gunn with the Guardians of the Galaxy films, I can't off the top of my head pick a director who works with his that wouldn't make sense. I was going to say works with his composer, but he's using soundtracks, so he doesn't have a composer. I guess arranger would be
like Hitchcock did it.
Yeah,
but like
Yeah,
it's a rare thing.
But like what I was saying, and my point is that he does the best job of placing the different songs in the scenes and making them fit. That's basically what I was saying. Long-winded. Hitchcock is another great one. Someone who off the top of my head is a director that does his own music and does it marvelously is John Carpenter. Halloween, The Thing. Well, actually, no. The Thing. Ennio Morricone did the score. But
Morricone.
Escape from New York. Halloween. A bunch of other. I think Big Trouble in Little China as well.
Oh, but I love that movie.
Yeah, but John Carpenter does all of his scores, and. Also very super iconic. So those are mine. Sorry for the ramble.
Isn't that what this whole thing is about?
Sometimes more so than others, but
that's why it's called the Film Twits Ramble.
Is it? I thought it was the Film Twits Podcast.
Well, that's what I call it.
Is that what we're calling podcasts now, rambles?
I think the only soundtrack we didn't talk about that I just think has to be mentioned is the Flash Gordon soundtrack.
Flash!
Because it's like it's Queen
man,
and you cannot like it.
Cannot go wrong with Queen. My biggest problem with that Bohemian Rhapsody movie is they made no mention at all of Flash Gordon.
I didn't see that yet.
It's
I would have been upset too by that.
It's not very great, but yeah, I was mad when I saw the movie and I was like, you're not even gonna mention that they did the entire soundtrack for Flash Gordon.
Because it was a huge deal. Gosh. And like Freddie Mercury poured his heart out into
that. Fly, my Hawkman! That's Back to the Future, but not Flash Gordon.
Sorry. It's in my head.
It's okay, but it's a good one.
It is a good one. If he was singing something dumb, then we would get on him, but...
Let's do Name That Tune.
Okay.
Ewoks.
No.
Gremlins.
Was that Gremlins?
No.
I don't know what that was. Was that a
song? I thought
song?
It would be more obvious. Never mind.
Teletubbies.
It's called another word. No, okay, the real title of the song is called The Murder.
Psycho.
Oh, yes. Psycho. Okay.
That's what that was? And that was good. I hear it now.
Yeah, now I know what you're saying. I'm sorry.
If you did it with your violin, I would have
done
it.
Oh, sure.
Right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much.
A Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
That's the more iconic. That's another one, like what we were talking about at the beginning. Like each character had their own thing.
Yeah.
And that was really what he did in that movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
That soundtrack.
Morricone's great.
Da 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 da.
Oh, that's a...
Come on.
Rocky.
Yes!
Yeah, Rocky, yeah.
Did you know? No, you didn't, because I've never told you. I would run to that soundtrack. Well, like two-thirds of the soundtrack.
Did you run upstairs to the soundtrack, Brandon?
No, but I imagined I was.
Oh, okay.
Aww,
did you imagine you were running in a crowd and they were all cheering you on?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon, go.
Yeah. How else would I keep going?
You could have a whole thing where you talk about Rocky if you want.
We should.
We have enough of them.
We should.
Well,
we'll definitely have to bring Allison back. Like, especially doing like a musical episode.
We should do a music. I've been wanting to do a musical one anyway.
Oh, when you talk about musicals.
Just
like, not
musicals.
Just music?
Just musicals.
Yeah. I
and
love musicals.
We have to sing song the whole thing.
Dave will be great at that. Dave can like pull it out. Like, no, yeah.
You guys can
sing song.
Can
he really?
He's a freestyler.
You guys can sing song it. And what I'll do is I'll do the Les Miserables thing where I just sing all of my words that I'm saying. Like the whole podcast. Brandon, do you like this musical?
Like Russell Crowe.
I do.
Yeah. Like Russell Crowe.
I mean, that was painful.
Oh,
I don't know if it was as painful as the Mamma Mia with...
Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia.
No.
Yeah, the Abba
one. Was it the Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah.
That was painful.
I never saw Mamma Mia. I'm kind of glad that I didn't.
No, you kind of have to watch it if you're going to have
really?
A musical episode.
I'm still working Abba. Into... I've spent my life
into
not
Abba.
Liking musicals. So I'm working my way into
man.
It. I like Les Miserables.
Oh, okay.
And
it's not one of my favorites.
Well, that was the first one that I could watch all the way through.
I liked it.
It's not so much of a musical, but I like La La Land.
La La Land's
and,
really good.
What was the other one? There was something else I watched.
I mean, technically...
Anyway, Fiddler
up...
on the Roof is on my list. I need to watch
very
that.
Very good. See, I'm more of the classics. Oklahoma...
Oh, man, I would hate that movie as a kid.
What, Oklahoma?
It was so annoying.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. I'm sorry. How can you not smile when you hear that?
Yeah. It's hard not to.
Brandon's like, I'm trying.
To be honest, I'm kind of in the same boat as Brandon. I grew up, like, kind of hating musicals. But as I've become an adult, I've watched more. One of my favorite off the top is Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
I love Seven Brides for Seven Brothers!
Yeah.
Whoa.
I would watch it like with my mom all the time, and
yes.
I really like it a lot.
That is really the movie good. Musical that made me think I was going to grow up and marry a red-headed lumberjack that was a great dancer.
Well, Dave, you've got a lot to live up to.
I mean, he's
Sorry.
A good dancer, but he's not a lumberjack or redheaded. So
I'm sure he could be.
I mean, we could dye his hair, and I'm
and
sure
he could
chop wood.
Become a lumberjack,
wood.
Yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
So, basically, I've got
they,
it.
They have wood in England, right?
They have trees.
Trees,
wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay,
this has
so...
This been a hoot.
I hate to say it, but I think we need to bring it to
call
a close.
It, call it to a close, yeah.
Thank you, Allison, for joining.
Yes, thank
this
you for
was,
joining us,
this
Allison.
Was a lot of fun.
Thank you
and
for
enlightening,
me.
Too.
Yes.
We learned a lot in this episode.
Good.
So. You taught us about the Shepard-Zimmer effect.
Tone. Shepherd Simmer.
Very good. Just blend it all together.
You were half right, Brandon.
And leitmotifs.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you already knew about leitmotifs. I did know that.
Did you?
I did.
Peter and the Wolf taught me.
Oh, yeah.
Peter and the Wolf. When I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful for that because it has stuck. I mean, I was a little kid, and that always stuck with me. And I think that's one of the main reasons why I so appreciate when characters get their own themes.
Yeah. Because it makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so this has been the Film Twits. Thank you for listening. And as always, you can find us on Facebook at the Film Twits Podcast. And we're on Twitter at the Film Twits. Mm-hmm. So please look us up, give us a like and a follow, and please give us any kind of feedback.
Yes, please.
Comments or suggestions or whatevs.
Tell us
if you don't want me to
like,
say whatevs anymore.
What is your favorite soundtracks and scores? Do you disagree with us? Do you agree with us? Do you think that all of our opinions are wrong? Just tell us. We want to know.
We can take it.
We can. Except for Dave.
They agree with me.
And
he's not here.
So. All right. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone. Until next time.
Toodles.